Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TateCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, we reunited the old gang, the Fantasy Insiders PGA Daily Fantasy Show. Myself, Timothy Frank, Ryan Forbes, the old crew, we got back together to talk about the 2019 PGA Championship. We talked about DraftKings Daily Fantasy, FanDuel Daily Fantasy, and betting, you know, some tips in terms of how to play the event from a betting perspective. Did a course preview for Bethpage Black, all that good stuff, all the things that you need to know to get ready for the 2019 PGA Championship in this podcast. If you are a fan of the show, if you want to support the show, we always appreciate a rating on iTunes. It really does make a difference. It really does help out. And you can also support the show by subscribing on Patreon to get bonus episodes of the show, some early release episodes of the show, and more. So that's $5 a month. We really appreciate that as well. And of course, we are sponsored by DailyRoto.com. Use the promo code Rory to get 10% off the best projections and lineup tools in the industry. I've actually won 3 MLB GPPs this year just using the Daily Roto tools and content. Trust me, I do not know that much about baseball, so the tools they are pretty good. And we're also presented by RotoExperts.com. Use the promo code Matic to get 10% off the $39.99 NFL 365 package that is headed up by yours truly. Now let's get into the show. All right, everyone. Welcome back to what, you know, at least 86 of you have really been waiting for, the reunion of the old Fantasy Insiders PGA Daily Fantasy Show. I'm Davis Matic, bringing in Timothy Frank and Ryan Forbes to talk about the 2019 PGA Championship, which, right before we went live, Ryan noted to us, actually, is the two-year reunion of the last time we ever did this show, which was the 2017 British Open, which, if I recall correctly, did not go that well. I think that was that the year that Spieth won?
Who knows? I'm sure it didn't go well. I don't need to even look back at the results to figure out if who I touted did well, but... Yeah, I mean, it's nice to be back with you guys, though. Yeah. We had a good time.
I'm just glad, Davis has had some pretty big names on the TateCast, but I don't know if anything comes close to Fantasy Golf Man. So this might be the biggest show ever.
The people wanted Fantasy Golf Man. When I told the Daily Roto Slack subscribers that we were doing this show, people were amped. They were ready for us to talk about the 2019 PGA Championship. And apparently, since we last podcasted, Ryan, you've actually gotten good at golf betting somehow. So at least one of the three of us has profited at golf betting over the last 2 years. You've been crushing the head to head markets, and Humble Brag has had 2 second places in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, the second places, like I said, you don't get any money for them. But Mitchell earlier in the year was big for me. So I'm kind of living off that for now, trying to pick up a winner here.
That's not having Keith Mitchell that week and having him pretty much every other week of the year is so insanely tilting, because I've been on him before. I was on him after. I think maybe that, like, was, did people tout the Honda Classic as an accuracy course or something? That would have been a dumb reason for me not to bet him.
I definitely was like team course fit for Honda, and I'm like, no way Mitchell has a shot here. You got to be accurate off the tee, and then he just goes and crushes the field. So yeah,
and he hit a 15-foot putt to win, to really
Dude, that was
everybody.
I remember I was like with my family, and they're like, what are you looking at under the table? And I'm like, well, actually,
I'm watching Keith Mitchell try not to piss himself standing over a 15-footer.
Yeah, that was Bermuda greens, man. Bermuda Keith, he loves those Bermuda greens.
So for the 2019 PGA Championship, not only is Tiger Woods the most expensive golfer on DraftKings, but he actually leads the betting markets. Scale of 1 to 10, how dumb is this, Tim?
If 10's being the worst, it's about a 10, I would say. The betting markets, we know they're driven by what, you know, the public action, and who's the more public player than Tiger. So it's like the books aren't going to take any chances with him. They know people are going to be betting him regardless of the number. So, yeah, they're going to make him the betting favorite, try and cover their ass. People will still bet him, but, yeah, I'm not putting him in the in the same class as DJ and Rory, even with the performance at the Masters. So yeah, it's egregious that he's the betting favorite. I think
he's like the sixth best golfer in the world now. I think Tiger 3.0 seems like he's like the sixth best golfer. Ryan, or are you just team Tiger? Are you letting your Tiger flag fly? He's back to number one.
I've always been a little bit, I guess, mean, would you say, to Tiger on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to hate the guy. I always tried to be like some higher up on my pedestal, saying, oh, he used to cheat on his wife. But you know, that was sort of the approach I was coming at from. It was certainly cool to see him win the Masters, though. And I wouldn't say I'm on Team Tiger, especially this week at these prices. I prefer to kind of, you know, that's an easy fade for me typically. And you know, just the name recognition, people are going to be out to put him on their team, bet him. I mean, you got what's his name throwing, the guy who bet the 80,000 or whatever.
Yeah, he threw 100K on him to win each,
like, of a million or 1.2 million or something. Yeah, so. He's already tossing that money in the dumpster. I was tweeting last week, so he bet on him to win all four majors now at like 100-1. And had he just like literally bet him and rolled all the money over at all three of those majors, he probably would have been 1,000-1 at least.
Yeah, at least something like that.
Plus a little bit of equity there. But if that guy wins again, I'm gonna be tilting big time, because that's just, I don't know if it gets more square than that.
FanDuel's running back the Tiger refund promotion too.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, I think it's much less, like, I don't even think that this course sets up all that well for him. You know, the rough is like 6 inches deep. This dude is going to try and hit a 4-iron out of the rough and tweak his back again. That's like something that's like really in play here.
Yeah, he drove the ball well at the Masters, which I think was his sort of downfall coming in. And, you know, if his tee game's there, he'll probably certainly be in the mix this week. I don't want to discount him, but, you know, just getting into things, I think this is certainly going to be at a 7,400-yard par 70. That's a ridiculous distance for a course that's only going to have two par fives. I think that distance is certainly going to be important this week. And not only distance, but really just total driving, you know, finding fairways, giving yourself a look in at some of these holes, because there's a lot of angles, a lot of it's going to be fun. But I think if you're not getting it off the tee, you're going to be lost.
How does Rory not win this week, Tim? How, like, it was he going to shoot a 76 on Sunday? Like, how is Rory going to come to this course with his game and his, like, his irons are so good, his tee game is so good right now? How does he ruin it this week?
It's really amazing that he's only won one event this year. You know, I run, like, before every tournament, I run, like, ball striking stats, like, off the tee and on approach. Like, just add those together. And he's, like, lapping the field. Like, 2.273 approach plus off the tee. And, like, the next closest player on tour is Corey Connors at, like, 1.4. So the guy is just – I don't know how he hasn't won more events. Obviously, I guess the short game would probably be the answer for that, or just some untimely loose shots. But yeah, I mean,
it's because the dude is just an idiot. Like, he finds ways to make sixes when every other tour professional makes a four. Like, it just all melts down at the exact wrong moment for him. He plays like just a stone idiot, like on 30% of his holes.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. It's like some course management or whatever you want to call it, but. Man, I think the course sets up great, especially it's going to be wet there this week, which is going to make it play longer. I'm with Ryan. Yeah, I think you need to be long off the tee and find the fairway. So, you know, Rory, best tee game in the business. I love him this week, but like you said, it's like he seems to find one or two or three stupid shots, stupid holes every event to, you know.
Is there water on this course? I haven't, like, looked at, like, a hole-by-hole layout. If there's no water –
yeah, that's close. I don't think there's a ton of water. I don't know. Ryan might know a little bit more about the track than I do. But, yeah, from what I
don't believe there's a ton of water that's going to be in play this week. I know around the greens there's a ton of bunkers. I've read a bunch of previews, and I apologize if I get this wrong. I think it was Josh Culp was pointing out that on average, players find like three more bunkers for the week when they've played here than normal. It went up from like 5 to 8 or something. That certainly bunker play should seem to factor in a little bit more. And really these greens are just like, all of them are like elevated. So, you know, if you're sitting in the rough and trying to hit an elevated green, you really have no way to stop the ball. And if you try to land it short, you know, the green's elevated, it's going to come back down. So, you know, finding the fairway and being able to control your spin and get them up on the right landing spot is going to be pretty key this week. Otherwise you're going to be finding a lot of trouble. I will say
it's supposed to rain kind of off and on this whole weekend. So that might eliminate a little bit of that. Like the guys who are a little bit shorter off the tee and are hitting like 4 irons into these greens, they might be able to run a little bit hot with that, 'cause it's just a lot easier to stick a 4 iron when the green is wet versus if it's been dried out and playing this event. They normally play the PGA in August. So yeah. playing it in May is like, in terms of like what the course plays like, is, I mean, it's a pretty reasonable difference in terms of how the grass is and everything. Brooks, like, you know, I'm not betting Brooks. I probably won't have him much on DraftKings. Well, I'll probably boost his projection a little bit on like the daily roto projections when I go to do it, but he still rates out as like a worse value than JT, than Rose, than Rahm.
So JT has withdrawn, in case.
Wow.
That was like within the last probably half hour.
Yeah, that just came out.
Wrist still bothered him, but should get that out there.
That probably saved me some money, because I was actually planning on going pretty heavy on JT.
Yeah, I think, I mean, he hasn't been the same since that wrist injury.
Since the Honda.
He came out just lighting the world on fire, and his, you know, his approach game was just unparalleled, really. And he just hasn't been there for him. You know, it's not like he's not having high finishes. You know, he was still 12th at the Masters, but probably good on his part, if he knows he's not healthy, to just, you know, take some time, get it completely healthy. I mean, Brooks had similar last year. I don't know if it's the same injury, but Brooks was talking about how, you know, he wasn't sure he'd ever get back from it. But I think it's probably wise on JT's part, just get healthy and maybe come back and tear it up for the second half of the season.
You ready to bail on Molinari for good, Tim? After his cataclysmic meltdown and then miscut the next week?
I think I bailed on Molinari 2 years ago, or like maybe right before he went on this like super hot streak. But yeah, he
did. Perfect timing.
It was, oh yeah, like typical me. Like, let's jump off right before he goes on this epic run. He does seem a little out of place, you know, at 9,700 with the names around him. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like him that much this week. I know it seemed like he was going to cruise to a win at Augusta and then kind of fell apart. I don't know how much scarring he has from that, but yeah, I don't like him compared to the names around him. He may have difficulties with a longer wet course. I mean, he's a fairly elite player, so I'm not too worried about it, but I don't think it's the best setup for him for sure here.
Long, no, it's because it's the best setup for, if it plays tough, it's going to be a really good setup for Fleetwood. And if John Rahm doesn't turn into a tilt box, like, I don't know, he probably wins, I think. Because like his tee to green game and his approach game are all so good right now. Like, he's like sort of not as good as Rory, but like most of his numbers are about as good as Rory. And then Xander is the other guy. Like, Xander at 25-1, my favorite bet of the tournament. Like, I think Xander has like real good win equity.
Yeah, I Xander was one. I had actually had him and Brooks at the Masters. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, tilting.
So I had both guys that finished second to Tiger. Even though I say it was cool to see Tiger win, yeah, that was a little painful. But yeah, in this price range, I mean, I really like Rose ahead of Xander. Feels like people are sleeping on him. He's coming in at 9,900. He just had a third at Quail Hollow a couple weeks back at the Wells Fargo, and I read an interesting article on Betfair. They were talking about correlation between Quail Hollow and this course, and basically it was like, okay, everybody that's won, I mean, they haven't played it at Bethpage that often, but Woods and Glover won the U.S. Opens in 02 and 09, and they both had wins at Quail Hollow. And I believe the same was true for Nick Watney. And I think Reed had it. So Nick Watney won the Barclays in 2012. He also had a win at Quail Hollow. Patrick Reed, 2016, won the Barclays, and he had a second at Quail Hollow at some point, I believe.
I totally buy that corollary. Actually, it makes a lot of sense to me. It's courses that play similar.
Yeah, and I mean that's a course where Rory's crushed at. So Rose coming off a third a couple weeks ago and coming in just under 10K, you know, right around guys like Fowler, you know, that people gravitate towards, Molinari, Schauffele. I really like Rose in this spot, and it seems like it's one of those times where, you know, we get Rose in a major where he's probably pretty underowned, and for the most part, he's one of those guys that can turn it on when he needs to, right? I mean, obviously we're looking at the Masters. He was highly touted coming in based on his course history there. I'm ready to jump back on this week, especially just given, you know, his all-around game is solid. Off the tee approach, or I mean, it's just he's got everything it would take to win a tournament at a tough course like this.
All right, Tim, you have to find a way to talk me out of just like 50% Bryson at 8,900. We got to find a way. Also, we should mention that I'm pretty sure that Ryan was the first person to ever tout Bryson DeChambeau on a fantasy golf podcast, because he mentioned him when he was in AM, I believe at the 2015 Masters was the year he played as the top AM.
I don't even remember this, but I'll take the award.
I'm certain that you're the first person to ever tell me about DeChambeau.
I think I did tell you about him, and then you were very high on him going forward, and I kind of jumped off the train. I got on the train like, I don't know, like February, March of this year, right when he was like really sucking. And yeah, I bet him a couple events, played him in some DraftKings, and it was like, all right, I'm getting really
I pressed the lock button on him at WGC Mexico for the T68. And I have not been back since, but I'm pretty sure that Bryson DeChambeau at 8,900 is like an extremely good play in all formats on DK.
Yeah. I mean, he does seem like the nut, like Millie Maker type play.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I don't think people are going to go there because he really hasn't been playing well. Kind of a prolonged stretch of not playing too well. What did he have, one good round at the Masters? I think he came out hot, and then
he shot a 66, and then he had a 70 on the final day, but that included...
I thought he was going to run away with it. Like, yeah. I thought, oh, DeChambeau's going to win, and he was, like, gone, like, his back nine of his second round or something, like, total rejection.
He had a double bogey, I think, on nine or something like yeah. that. It was not pretty, though. He shot a 76 on Friday. Not quite as bad as Paul Casey, though.
Oh God, that was brutal. But you know, Bryson's had some time off, which normally we don't like, but maybe with him, it might be a good thing. Recalibrate everything. He's still probably trying to get over the altitude in Mexico. That's probably thrown him off for 16 straight weeks. But yeah, I mean, I think there's risk involved, but yeah, like, you know, like large field GPP, he just seems like the kind of a play you want, you know, big upside.
He's the pivot off Finau. I mean, the word's out on Finau in majors, and you know, as people talk about distance, you know, it's like Finau's checking all the boxes, and I certainly like him this week. You know, four of his last five majors, he's been in the top 10, so he's kind of like Brooks Light, if you will.
Yeah. He's like Brooks Light with like a little bit less will to win.
Yeah, yeah.
Brooks would have never hit it in the water.
Brooks did hit it in the water on 12.
Oh my God, that's right. That was a crazy nine holes.
That was the difference in the tournament. Brooks and Molinari hit it in the water, and Tiger found the green.
Finau hit it in the water too?
Finau hit it in the water as well.
Oh
yeah.
My
so that
gosh.
That was the difference. I mean, Tiger was pretty much the only one from those last couple of groups that found the green on 12, and yeah.
You know what actually swung it in a way that really impacted me was that Xander parred 15. Xander on that on
yeah,
15,
the par five.
Yeah, and he like hit it way over the green, left a horrible chip, and like had like work left to save par. That was like really brutal, and he didn't even try and birdie 18 either. It was just a really tilting sequence of events for someone with I think what was Xander like 40-1 that weekend?
I think he was 40. Yeah, it did, you know, it struck me well that he said after that, you know, it kind of gave him, even though he didn't win, it gave him like the confidence to know that, hey, I can win any of these events. So, yeah, kind of going along with your thoughts on Xander, I'm with you there. I probably won't bet him this week at the prices, but the DraftKings price is super sweet at 9,100, and you know he's gonna be big game hunting.
So the reason that I don't know if Finau is going to be mega chalk is that I'm pretty sure 1 in 3 DraftKings lineups, Tim, is just going to come preloaded with Patrick Cantlay at 8,200.
Yeah, that's a tough one to get away from. You know, the way he played in the Masters. Man, that round on Saturday was just amazing. Yeah, I mean, the guy does it all. I think, you know, he had the stigma of having a terrible short game, and I think people would always bring that up, especially at more difficult courses.
Bunker play.
But he's not that bad, though. I think, you know, he hit a couple bad bunker shots in, like, key spots in a couple events early on in this comeback, maybe last year. But, you know, his around the green game, if you look at the numbers, isn't that bad. I think he's just got a great all-around game. Yeah, he's like, like you said, it's just lock him in, hit the lock button. It's hard to see him. I don't want to put the jinx on him, but it's hard to see him failing at 8,200. That's just a great price. I think he's got, you know, I think he's got a great chance to win this event.
Yeah, Data Golf has him with the same win equity and top 20 equity as Tiger Woods at this tournament.
Well, there you go.
And Tiger Woods is the most expensive guy. Like, I don't know. I try not to go like super mega overweight in golf just because, like, you know, there is so much variance and, like, you know, whatever. Anyone can shoot a 75 on any given day. But Patrick Cantlay at 8,200, it's sort of like when Brooks used to be 8K at these majors. It would just be like, why would you not just load up on that guy when you're like going to get a T16 worst case scenario?
Yeah. And okay, so Cantlay's 19th in strokes gained around the green this year. And, I mean, if you asked people, they would say, oh, terrible short game. So, yeah, I mean, he really doesn't have any holes in his game, you know, this year. I love Cantlay, but that's not really breaking any news. I think everybody's going to be in the same boat.
Do you think that people will play Paul Casey after, like, I mean, his recent form has not been good. And the last time people saw him, he was, 9 over at the Masters, I think?
He bounced back with a fourth at Wells Fargo 2 weeks ago.
Did not even know that. I barely watched Wells Fargo.
That's fine. But people love playing Paul Casey.
They do.
I don't know that they love betting him as much, but he'll probably be a staple in a lot of DraftKings lineups at 8,300, you know, $100 more than Cantlay. You can probably get them both in easily and feel pretty confident in your lineup.
Yeah.
I'm going down a little bit. I like specifically for betting. I'm pulling the trigger on Bubba this week at 55. The game's been up and down. You know, you never know what you're going to get with the putter on Bubba. But really, it his three appearances at this course, he's got a 13th in 2016. He was 10th in 2012 and then 18th at the 2009 U.S. Open. So, I mean, a guy with Bubba's length, creativity, you know, his approach game has been a little up or down, a little hit and miss, but really his, like, long irons, you know, I have a little bit more confidence if he's going to have to be even with people who are farther back as far as his long irons go. So, I do like Bubba. At 55-1, it feels like a really good price.
Hate to have it
8,000 on DraftKings, by the way.
But I'm in on Bubba this week. I think he's
nice.
I think he's got pretty good win equity at 50-1, and I think that he also makes a really good DraftKings play because scoring is going to be pretty limited this week in terms of like birdies and eagles. And Bubba is one dude who like there was I think the stat was there was 2 eagles on this course when they played it in 2016 for the Northern Trust. And if you were going to tell me 2 guys got an eagle and you told me it was Bubba and Rory, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense that it was Bubba. Like it would, and you know, if the winning score is going to be 105. You know, an eagle can swing things if Bubba's like T4 or whatever. Like, I'm pretty in on Bubba this week.
Yeah, I'll just make it a clean sweep. I like it.
All right.
There we go.
You know, I think the 13th, the 10th, and the 18th, I think that's pretty huge for Bubba, because we know that, like, if he just doesn't like a course, he hates it and he's got no chance. So I think, you know, comes in with some good vibes. He's played this course three times, three solid finishes. You know, in his last two stroke play events were a 12th at the Masters and a 4th at the Valspar. So, I mean, he played the Zurich and he played the match play, but those are really results that we don't really care about too much, we can throw out. So, yeah, last two stroke play events, solid. Likes it here. He's crushing it off the tee. Almost a full stroke gained per round off the tee, which is huge. So, yeah, we all like Bubba. So, that's not a good sign, probably.
This next range is...
He's going to lose, like, six strokes putting on Thursday. Like, that's
100%, yeah.
Well, what you want with Bubba, well, what you don't want with Bubba is just for him to start tilting. Like, I think he could probably survive losing two strokes putting as long as he's just not tilting off the next holes. Like, once you get Bubba tilting and hitting stuff left, like, you're just, like, you're miserable.
Yeah. I think while we're in this range, just real quick, I'll toss in, you know, Phil's one with his history at Quail Hollow, if you're making that comparison. He's also at 8K. He was, like, atrocious, though, 2 weeks ago at Quail Hollow, so I don't know what to make of that. He seems to be living his best life where, you know, he could come out and win a tournament and then shoot, like, 80 the next week.
Phil is low-key hitting the ball further off of the tee, which I thought was interesting just going through stuff.
Bombs, like man.
Yeah, he's like 10 yards longer off the tee this season than his last couple of years of averaging.
I just like Phil for his Twitter posts. I mean, he's crushing it on Twitter.
Yeah. This is like a really boring range of guys. Like, these are all guys who I think are fine. Like Stenson, Sergio, Louis, whatever. Webb, I think is really good here. But the most interesting name that I got to toss to Tim is, I mean, what do you do with Jason Kokrak? Like, this dude is just a walking top 10, and I cannot reconcile him with the guy that, like, used to be, like, just a threat to miss cut at any time. Like, he could miss the cut at the Byron Nelson, no problem, 5 years ago.
I don't think I've clicked Jason Kokrak's name one time this year, and the guy has just been a print fest if you've been playing. So, yeah, it's so hard to get that out of your head of, like, the player who he was, you know, 2-3 years ago. You're just waiting for, like, the other shoe to drop. But the guy, the ball striking has been amazing. It's, like, so consistently good. If you go back and look at the ball striking for, like, every event over his last, I don't know, the whole season, he's gaining 4, 5, 6, 7 strokes with the ball striking. But I don't think – I mean, I haven't played him all year. I'm not going to start in a major championship. Especially with some of these other names around him. But, yeah, it's probably a bad move because the guy's just been absolutely crushing this year.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, the ball striking numbers have at least gotten a little bit worse. Like, he's not like the absolute stone best now. He's like, above field average, but he's not, like, Rory McIlroy with a 7-iron now. So, like, that makes me feel a little bit better. Like, because I think he might come in at something like 15%, which would just be – not good. But Ryan, a guy who I think is a good bet in this, like, sort of range of golfers is Webb. I think he's like 75-1 on most of the sports books. You might even be able to get a better number. I think he's got, like, legit win equity here.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring it up. I hadn't really centered on Webb this week. 66, I'm seeing. Yeah, 66 and on both sites that I'm on. So I've sort of, you know, you glossed over Stenson and Garcia. Those are the guys that really stood out for me. I know both can really not putt at this year at all. They've both been pretty miserable putting wise, but they're both their approach games near the top in this field. I was looking, Stenson's gaining like 1.2 strokes around approaching the green. Sergio's right behind him at 1.09. I mean, take your chances and hope that they find some luck with the putter. I know maybe I'm making this up, but it feels like the Poana greens seem to bring out worse putters. I was just looking at the guys that do better on Poana greens. It's like Bubba, Finau, JB Holmes, Kokrak was on there. So those are guys that perform better on Poana greens. And again, that's from I get a lot of stuff from Josh Culp, his Future of Fantasy blog. So I don't know. I'm sort of gravitating towards both of them. You guys already kind of talked about Kokrak. He's sort of in that same boat where the approach game pretty much on fire. We can talk about Poulter at 7,600. I mean, he's playing as good as he ever has. I don't know that that translates to wins for Ian Poulter. He's sort of the, you know, it's not his boat. I mean, he'll definitely be there. Right. I think he's a solid play on DraftKings. People will probably be on him, but, yeah, he's another one that sort of stood out in this range for me. So if I'm ranking them, I think it's definitely Sergio then Stenson, and then Kokrak and Poulter are pretty even for me. I've bet Kokrak like 4 weeks in a row when he's been playing because I just feel that win's coming, and I've obviously lost 4 weeks in a row.
If it comes at the PGA Championship, I'm going to be apoplectic. I am not. It's going to ruin the whole experience for me.
But he plays well on tough courses. I remember him being there like 2 or 3 years ago at Riviera. The courses where he's done well this year were the Honda, the Copperhead. He played well at Riviera this year too. So, you know, as far as tough courses go, that doesn't really concern me. And, you know, going off, I think at like 100-1 instead of like 40-1 where I was betting him the last couple of weeks is a little bit more enticing. Nice. So I don't know. I'm probably going to be back on the Kokrak train this week.
If I know anything about golf betting, I feel like he's going to win like the John Deere at like 9-1 or something.
Yeah, it's true. Sure. Yeah,
that's how these things go, right?
Yeah,
it'll be like DJ at 2-1 at the Canadian Open and Kokrak at 8-1, and Kokrak will just hold him off somehow.
The one thing I could see for sure happening is that Lucas Glover has won a PGA championship before, and there is not
US Open,
but it was at Bethpage, right?
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So there is not a more Lucas Glover style golfer than Jason Kokrak. Like until this last 3 month stretch, I like don't know if I could have differentiated their like statistical profiles. So that's my one thing with Kokrak. There are a couple other guys in this range I like though. Haotong, I think he's like a bet and a DraftKings play. I think the same for Ryan Moore. And
wow.
Friends don't let friends play Ryan. Yeah, I know.
Any former listeners of the podcast will know.
They're not happy. The Data Golf guys always want to get Ryan Moore in there, though. They think he's good.
Yeah, the problem with me and Ryan Moore is, like, the places where he usually wins are, like, it's sort of like Snedeker, like, it's just terrible fields. So he's won a lot in his career. I don't think he's won in like 3 years though. But
well, he's not very good. Fields. Yeah,
he's good, but I don't know. I'm not jumping out at me this week, to be honest.
I mean, I think I'd rather play Keith Mitchell and Rafa Cabrera-Bale. I feel like RCB might be like he might be the guy who's actually like really underpriced. Like Rafa Cabrera-Bale is like he's better than Alex Noren or Ryan Palmer, Shane Lowry. He's way better than those guys.
Yeah, people will say that he's playing meh, but I mean he's a notoriously sort of streaky guy. When he finds it, he finds it. And yeah, I do like RCB.
What do you think on RCB, Tim?
Yeah, I mean I don't love this range. Once we get below, like I'm not a big fan of the mid to low sevens, but he is one of the guys that stuck out to me. Yeah, it just
seems you don't like the worst golfers. Is that what you're?
Yeah, like all these terrible guys, they're just not for me. No, I think there's some cheaper guys that I like better than some of these dudes in the mid-range. But yes, he stuck out as being too cheap. Not playing great, but you know, we know he has some upside. You know, he's fairly consistent. Mitchell's interesting, but the Poe greens really scare me. Ryan hit the nail on the head. I don't know if that was before we started rolling the tape, but yeah, on Bermuda, he just seems to be a completely different player. The course should set up well for Mitchell, but yeah, I don't know. Poe just, it seems like it could pose some problems for him here.
Well, this is your range of dudes, Tim. This is your like you. This is we got Russell Knox, we got Johnny Vegas, Graham McDowell. We got all your guys down here. So this is your chance for the bombs.
This is like the anti Tim course though, right? It's like bombs away. Like this, Russell Knox isn't doing too much here. I'd say probably like one of my favorite plays, and I hope this dude is not too chalky, is Aaron Wise at 7,100.
He will not. He won't be.
Rough start to the season. Just did not. I don't know what happened. He like got jacked and was doing steroids and like gained like a muscle. And just did not start the season off well. But T17 at the Masters. Then he was T18 at Wells Fargo. And gained. Gained a bunch of strokes off the tee on approach. And then he was T43 last week, which isn't going to catch people's attention, but he was equally as good with the ball striking last week. He just didn't putt. So, you know, he bounced, you know, T17, the Masters, and then two really good ball striking performances at Wells Fargo and Byron Nelson. And he's really strong off the tee when his game is working well. So I like him. I think the course sets up well. And I think he's one of the guys where you got to dig a little bit deeper to kind of see why he's a good play. I think if you're just looking at course history, which he has none, recent form, year-long stats, like none of that's going to look too good. But if you kind of dig a little bit deeper, I think he's a great play. So hopefully not a ton of people will be on him.
His year-long stats look like decent to me. He's like pretty good. A couple other guys down here, Mr. Strokes Gained Putting, Justin Harding. He almost like ran like into a top 15 at the Masters just by gaining like 9 strokes putting.
Nelson Adcock's boy. He'll be playing a lot of.
He'll definitely have Harding. So I think maybe Jim Furyk gonna have trouble contending here. Maybe a little bit too long for Father Time.
He better have the hybrids working this week to have any chance.
CH3 at 7K. What? Why did he withdraw last week, Ryan? Do you know?
I don't know that I saw any more than just that he was out. A red flag, and it's not like he's coming in playing great. I mean, the two missed cuts. Maybe he was battling an injury. I think he missed cut at RBC and then at Wells Fargo. Not like the results were really spectacular prior to that either. So I don't know. I'm probably out on CH3 this week.
I would play also, him if I knew he was healthy for sure.
Yeah. I'm also probably out on, I think people like Perez. He's had a couple good finishes in a row.
No, but, I'm out on that too.
With he's basically lost strokes off the tee in both those finishes. So a little bit different of a challenge this week. I would probably avoid him at 7K.
You got any Euros to tout? They're like the whole bottom of the field. It's really interesting. Like the whole bottom of the field is just – it's Luke List and Euros below 7,000.
Yeah, I mean, I think – I don't know how you ignore Jorge Campillo on this list at 6,900. So 5 of his last 6 tournaments on the Euro Tour, he's been inside the top 3. He had a win 3 weeks ago at the Trofeo Santu. Certainly going to be a different challenge where, you know, relative to par, they might be 9 to 12 under in most of the tournaments he's playing in. You know, guys are 16 to 20. So a little bit more of a challenge. But, I mean, good golf's good golf. And if it's on, you know, hopefully it translates anywhere. So at only 6,900, I like Campillo a lot. I don't think that's a controversial take based on how he's been playing.
I got an interesting one for Tim. John Daly, Dylan Fratelli, or Harold Varner, because they're all the exact same price.
I'm slightly interested in Fratelli. He's been striking the ball well. The putting
he's like the most tour grinder, grindy guy ever. Like he's just like gonna make. He's like very like Aaron Baddeley. He's gonna play on tour for 30 years, never win, do well in like the alternate events, like the Barracuda. But he's not good.
I disagree. I think he has some talent. I just don't think he's really put it all together this year. He hasn't had any high finishes. Been consistent, but just kind of mediocre. But I mean, I think the talent's there. I don't think he's a terrible play.
No, I don't think he is. I don't think he's terrible. He's got like, you know, 55% chance to make the cut.
Yeah, I mean, like he, that. he struck it well last week. He lost almost six strokes putting, so that wasn't that's not ideal. But going back to Euros, I'll definitely play some Thomas Peters for sure. I think you know, you kind of never know what you're going to get with him. But in tournaments, and I think the course sets up well, I think he's a guy. We've seen him. And I feel like I go back to these finishes now that are getting farther and farther away, when he contended at Riviera, when he contended at the WGC in Mexico, when he contended at the Masters. But, I mean, we've seen him do it in big events. But he's just so volatile, so up and down. But, you know, at 7K, we know he has length. We know he can score. We know he can play and contend in tough events and tough fields, but he's almost equally as likely to just blow up in terrible events too. So you kind of got to embrace the volatility with him. But at 7K, I always like, you know, some of them in tournaments, providing he's not going to be that owned.
Yeah, I think all of that is reasonable. I think that's probably about it for the player pool. Who wins, Tim?
I think Rory wins. I just can't get. Yeah. I look at his ball striking numbers, and they're so much better than anyone on tour this year. It's just hard for me to get away from that, and he's been consistently good, so I'm gonna go with Rory.
All right, Ryan, who wins?
Mr. Alpha Man, Brooks.
A true throwback to when we were definitely first on Brooks. We were late on many things, but we were first on Brooks.
I'll tell you what since we haven't podcasted in 2 years, we were so high on Brooks Koepka. And I've been on zero of his major wins on him betting wise. And that still tilts me to this day that, like, why I just wouldn't throw on him, because, you know, you always believed in the guy. But he's certainly got this thing where he turns into like a robot at these majors and just, you know, grinds out birdie after birdie and par after par. And it's impressive.
I think when he gets there, he hits every putt. Every drive is 310 right down the center. You never think he's going to miss an iron shot. Like, it really is crazy how well he plays at these things.
That drive on 18 at Augusta, when like people are cheering on Tiger on the tee box.
Yeah, he doesn't
Tiger's care. The hole behind, and he just like rips a perfect drive. Like, we watched that. I watched that hole all day, and like nobody was in good position off the tee, and he just strokes one down the middle of the fairway and has like 140 in for a good look at birdie. But
so I was there the Sunday when he won at the PGA Championship at Belle Reve, and I mean, the crowd was booing his birdies. So he birdies 17 and the crowd is booing him because they, you know, they all want Tiger to win, and he just, like, the guy could not be phased less. Like, he just didn't care. He walks up to 18, rips it. He had like an 8-footer for birdie to win by 3, and he ended up missing it, but it doesn't matter. The guy shows up to win major championships. That's just what he does.
Yeah.
All that being said, I'm picking Xander to win. The PGA it's the easiest for first time winners to win because the field has so many guys who are terrible, and the conditions are generally good for scoring. Like, I think there may be some of this stuff about the rough is a little bit overblown because the PGA wants to keep the players happy. Like, they don't want it to be like a US Open where every player is complaining about how horrible it is. So I think there's a chance that scoring goes a little bit lower than we think. And if that is the case, like, I mean, Xander can win either way, but if the winning score is like minus 18, I like him even more.
Davis taking a young up and coming stud was,
you've never
was
seen like it before,
minus 3,000 for this these predictions, by the way.
I
love Xander too.
Rory is the other guy though. It just feels like, when's the last, I honestly don't even know this, when's the last time Rory won a major? Like 2016, 2015?
I don't know.
It was the PGA Championship 2016, I believe.
That's crazy, man. He's way too good to go 3-4 years without a major. Like, he is – I mean, Rory and DJ, I believe, are the best golfers in the world, and then everyone else is.
That was the one where it was like him, Phil, and Ricky, and there was like dark, and Phil's like, let's keep going. And I think Ricky, like – it was like pitch black, and Ricky lips out his final putt, and it cost him like $300,000 or something because he fell from like second to fifth. But yeah.
Sucks to suck, Rick. Phil loves that move, making guys play in the dark.
Oh, he's such a jerk. I love it.
He really
Phil's
is.
Phil's living. If you haven't gotten a chance, go check out the Phil, like, calf raise Twitter post that he
had. It's good stuff.
Oh, it's great how he builds it up, and then he's living his best life. I love it.
He is. All right, boys, that's going to do it for us here after the reunion of the FIPGA Daily Fantasy Show. We hope it was helpful or at least entertaining for you guys. Talk to you later.